from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Good evening. Welcome to Burning Issue. I'm your host, Yazid Kamaldin. In tonight's show, we are dealing with the thorny issue of land occupation. We know that land is always a sensitive subject, which lends itself to race and politics. Recently, our news has been dominated by reports of land occupation attempts in Cape Town, which have descended into violence and chaos. The city of Cape Town says it has dealt with 260 incidents of alleged illegal land occupation between April and July's lockdown. The Western Cape government says these are, quote, highly coordinated and sophisticated, unquote, incidents. Attempts to illegally occupy land, city projects or community facilities include several orchestrated attempts in Kraaifontein, Mfuleni, Khayelitsha, Delft, Dunoon, Fergrove, Macassar, Milnerton and Yanga, among others. From what we have seen, shacks are erected on open pieces of lands, but law enforcement authorities are quick to dismantle these dwellings, which has resulted in clashes. So what is the root of the land invasions? How should the government respond? And what does the law say about the invasion of land? These are the questions we ask in tonight's show. We'll have a couple of guests on air, and let's go straight to our first guest. His name is Linda Pito. He is an activist from Kraaifontein, and he is from the Community Advisory Services. Linda, good evening and welcome to Burning Issue.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, and I'm so glad that to get the opportunity to speak before this show, and I'm glad everyone in this Western Cape province.
Great. So give us an update. What exactly is happening in Kraaifontein?
The problem as we're facing here in Kraaifontein, the people are invading the land. Since the issue is the COVID-19 pandemic, from there they see the land. Some members doesn't know that land is occupying for the houses is supposed to started by soon. Some they know, but since the issue is the COVID-19 and doesn't have the money to rent for the landlords. But ever since they started that land, the law enforcement came and the law enforcement removed by force. From there, they're starting the picketing, they're starting to be angry, they're starting to toy, so on, so on.
Okay, now you are from and you are the founder of an organization called Community Advisory Services, and you are one of the mediators, I believe, involved in the recent land occupation there in Kraaifontein. What are people saying? Like, why are they taking the land?
Okay. Number one, Community Advisory Service, meaning that CAS is not supported illegal land, and is not supported the protest, including the looting. But it's only one thing they supported in terms of the official of the city or the official of the government who is supposed to come listen the grievance of the people, or the reason why the people are seeing that land, are putting the shack in everything. That is main thing, the focus of the case. Or community advisor is that what is the way forward and what is the reason the people associated that land. The only one thing they needed from there and the way forward.
Okay, so but why are people invading the land? Firstly, it's obviously land that is owned by the government, right? It's not private land, it's government.
Absolutely.
Land.
Uh-huh. Yes. And, no, the reason the people are invading the land in Kraaifontein, particularly in Bloemfontein, the most people are back dwellers, meaning that they stay at the backyard. That backyard is supposed every month to pay the rent. It's not the same people are paying the same month, the same money. Some are paying 500, 800, some are paying 700, some are paying 400. Meaning that since now, was us in the country, including the province, were in the lockdown level 5 and level 4, even including now level 3, some people doesn't have the money to pay rent. In terms of the lockdown, some are losing jobs, some is not working, some are working one day, some are not even working. Meaning that doesn't have now a long run now to pay the rent. Still, some people are still the land there. They took a decision that let us go stay in that piece of land. At least now is not longer gain to pay the rent, or doesn't have the money to pay the rent.
So I get that it's a financial constraint because they don't have money, but what do they want ultimately? Because the city of Cape Town's law enforcement, of course, removes the people off the land because it is a government property. So what do they see then as the solution? Do they think that they should just put up their shacks and stay there indefinitely, or what do they see as a solution all the way forward? Because the city will just evict them every time.
Yeah, the solution now, like example, as a case now, we will speak with a Human Rights Commission, including writing the letter to Premier's office, also the Mayor's office. The solution is, I think it will be good, every all of us, that let us need to take alternative land where he can remove those people to put another land, and immediately they remove those people, the contractor or the development, he must start immediately effect. It's only one thing, but before they put that, he must come listen the grievance while the people are sitting there. After that, they're taking the division or they're taking the way forward. Because a people is the people, and also the people, they have a right, but that right, the official, he must champion those rights of those people are sitting there, meaning that it's the way forward.
Okay, and may I ask, where did all the people come from?
Okay. Most people are coming from here in Kraaifontein, particularly in Bloemfontein.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, they are
Bloemfontein is the most people is the backyard in Bloemfontein.
So they are not coming from different areas in Cape Town, they are just from that one area.
I'm not sure about that. I didn't want to speak another thing. I'm not sure about that. But the most things I see, Bloemfontein is only phase 1 and phase 2 only. No phase 3 other phases. So that's why I said most people are from Bloemfontein. I'm not saying that there's no other people from different areas, but the majority is here in Bloemfontein.
Okay. We're going to leave it at that. Linda, thank you so much for your time, and we wish you all the best with your mediation work in Kraaifontein. Thank you for joining us this evening on Burning Issue.
Thank you very much.
Assalamu alaikum, good evening. Welcome back to The Burning Issue with your host Yazid Kamaldin. Of course, this evening we are looking at land occupation, and we're also looking at what is pushing it, what's the push and pull factors actually, and how should the government respond? Why is all of this happening? What is at the root of the land invasions? Now we are going to be joined by our second guest. His name is Pastor Charles George, and he's the Delft Community Police Forum chairperson. Pastor Charles, good evening and welcome to Burning Issue.
Good evening and welcome to your listeners as well.
Yeah. So what is happening in Delft or even in the surrounding areas? We've had, before our break, we had somebody from Kraaifontein telling us that the reason why a lot of people are going onto government-owned land is because they are staying in somebody's backyard and they don't have the money. They can't afford to pay the rent every month. So they're putting up a shack on a piece of land where they presumably won't have to pay this. But what's happening in Delft?
Yeah, thanks very much for this opportunity. I think it's important, as your previous guest alluded to the fact that it is a lot of backyard dwellers that was evicted. We know that no landlord was allowed to evict any tenant during the lockdown process or provisions that were set out. Unfortunately, it's a catch-22 situation if you look at some of the landlords, because remember they have also bills to pay, and if they don't receive the income, they can't pay their bills. So that was the one issue. The other issue was that there was also a lot of people that is on the waiting list, on the housing waiting list, and we know that there's a huge backlog. And there's no clear communication to those individuals with regards to where they are on this waiting list. So that also built up some of the frustrations as well. And then obviously there was no government bailout for those that lost their jobs, that was renting property, etc. So it's a number of issues, but it all boils down to frustration with regards to service delivery across the board. So, you know, when you see people protesting, they're not necessarily protesting over one issue. It's always a combination of issues. Let me make an example. You know, when we had load shedding, for argument's sake, in Delft, there was one day when our electricity was off for 9 hours. Now, all other areas were stage two, which means it was 2 hours, two and a half hours off, but we were off for 9 hours. So a lot of people that barely getting by would buy groceries, put things in the refrigerator, and we know after 9 hours then the thing in your fridge has been affected because it's perishable goods. So it's a number of issues, and obviously people are looking for some form of leadership to say, okay, can someone lead us where we're going to and how this is going to happen and how we as a family can live. And the leadership component was silent, and that's where certain people also took the gap and saw the opportunity also to mislead people by kind of encouraging them with regard to the land invasion, only for those people to be disappointed once again, you know. So we wanting to also say to people that they don't give people false hope, because that also adds to the frustration. If you look at the grant that the government has, yeah, that's also failing. So it's a lot of different issues.
Yeah. So the thing though is, this is illegal. So, you know, to occupy a piece of land that you do not own, I mean, I'm assuming most of it has been on public land. We do also, of course, know of cases of private land that has been invaded. But most of the current or the recent spate has been on public land. Now, how does one even begin to have a conversation with people who are already quite desperate financially, who are now seeking to just get by, going onto a piece of land where they won't have to pay rent, you know? How does one even begin to have a conversation with people to say that it's illegal?
Well, look, number one, what really frustrates me is that, you know, the world is moving in one direction and South Africa is moving in the opposite direction. We are in the 21st century, and the technology and the tools that we have available in this country, we need to use those platforms to communicate to people with regards to what the processes are. So I firmly believe that there was a lack of communication to these individuals. As I said, if you have a problem, Let's call it spade a spade. If you have a problem right now with regards to your water issue at home, I would love you to phone the City of Cape Town, phone the call centre to report that, or report the lights, or street lights not working, or report the potholes. If you're phoning from a community like Delft to those type of call centres, you at least need to have 120 rand airtime on your device.
Yeah, of course.
So you understand what I'm saying. Government fails to understand the position people are in. And as I said, it's a whole lot of systems that's been failing the people, and this is building up the frustration. So eventually, when you keep on giving people false hope, eventually there comes a time when people get frustrated and tired, and they get worn out with all these empty promises, and then they just start to act out. I'm not condoning it. What I'm saying is not right to invade land. It's not right to protest, violent protest. Every one of us has the right to protest in this country, but not to damage private property or stone vehicles or burn them. That's not the way to do it. But someone needs to listen to the cry of the people out there, because the system is failing our people in this country called South Africa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think what we need to also maybe, I'm loving that we are unpacking the causes behind this, because it's so easy to be dismissive and say, ah, it's illegal what they're doing, but to really to understand the level of poverty and the level of need, actually, in fact, most of our listeners would be fully aware of the situation, you know, especially now during lockdown, because there have been so many stories of people and how we are struggling. But particularly around the land issue, what would push someone, you know, what kind of desperation is behind the act of going with your bare minimal belongings and to then go onto a piece of open land and say, I am now going to make my house here? It isn't necessarily just about a desire to just go and live on an illegal piece of land and not want to pay. The fact is, people don't even have money to pay. That's really what it comes down to. So, okay, so yeah, it's not just sheer criminality then.
The other issue that we need to raise is that we are dealing with perception. And people looking from the outside in perceive all these people to be violent gangsters, ruffians. They perceive, because we live in a township, we are all useless and hopeless, and we are all drug addicts, So there's a lot of perceptions that we also need to deal with. Because what you see on TV is only one part of what's really happening on the ground. And I think the time has come that we start to deal with these perceptions as well. Like you rightfully say, that we must probably show the criminal element on national TV with regards to the protesting and the looting. But they don't really show that single parents that lost their job, that, our only source of income was the job that she had. And they don't show how this poor lady needs to feed her three kids, still pay the rent, because the landlords are demanding the rental from her.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that we need to sit down, and we need to deal with, first of all, the perceptions of how people perceive these townships to be.
Yeah. Let's leave it at that, Pastor Charles. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us the insights from your community. Thank you so much. Welcome back to The Burning Issue with myself, Yazid Kamaldin, and we continue our discussion on land occupation in the Western Cape. Earlier, we had two guests from Delft and Kraaifontein telling us the situation on the ground and the motivations of people. We've heard that it's a financial struggle for a lot of people. They can't afford to pay rent, so they go and take their belongings and put it on a piece of land where they don't have to pay the rent. Now we are going to welcome two more guests to our show online, and we have Cheryl Das, the Regional Director of the Legal Resources Centre's Cape Town office, as well as Zama Mgwachu, a Program Manager at the Development Action Group. Cheryl and Zama, good evening and welcome to Burning Issue.
Good evening. Good evening. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure. Look, I'm going to ask certain questions. The goal is to understand what is happening around land occupations. Of course, we want to know what is really pushing this. It seems that things have reached a boiling point. So let's start with a basic question either guest can answer first. Why are land occupations happening and so much of it at the moment?
Okay, maybe I can start to say, I think...
It's Zama, right? So this is Zama talking. Yeah, hi, Zama. Yeah.
Zama, I'm quite sure. I think Program Manager at the Government Action Group. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a combination of things that are at play. And I think it's not for us to speculate in terms of why, but I think it's for us to better understand the sector first. For example, a lot has happened in terms of the delivery of houses. But then we'll find out that there's been a sector that has been neglected for all these years, the backyard sector. But then within the backyard sector, how do we start to better understand who are those in the backyard sector? Are they calling for a house? Are genuinely calling for a house? Because within the backyard sector, there are those who qualify for RDB type of a house, but there are those who don't qualify for the RDP type of a house. Hence, I started by saying a lot has been done in terms of delivery. But then, how do we start as government, as civil society organizations, and private sector to rethink the approach of addressing the council's housing crisis?
Okay. I mean, can you just be more specific to the question? So why do you think the land occupation is happening? Is it because that there are more people needing to stay somewhere and they don't have money? Or, I mean, is it political? What's going on?
The demand for housing in metros has been growing since. And I think currently, due to COVID-19, we're seeing a range of sectors at play. For example, if you look at the backyard sector, there's people there who lost jobs who are staying in backyards. And it's a sector that is informal. The rules are informal. And we've seen landlords evicting people even during the lockdown period. And how do we start to look at that?
Okay.
But then there's issues around the database. I've been waiting in the database, and how long I'm going to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think lastly from my side would be, we've seen a situation whereby people have perceived that if I invade a piece of land, then I'll secure myself a site with services, then I'll be closer to a golden opportunity of getting an RTP type of a house.
Okay, thank you. Let's hear from Cheryl. Cheryl, what are you making of this? What's happening on the ground?
Look, I think it's a very difficult question to answer. It's not a simple question, and you can't really pinpoint one or other factor that has contributed to the increase in land occupation. I think if you really want to look at it, you have to have a conversation about the structural inequalities that still exist in the country post-1994. The global pandemic has laid bare our dirty laundry, and it has accentuated our inefficient response to addressing the high levels of poverty and the growing inequality in our country. The number of people living below the poverty line in informal settlements is a symptom of this inaction and of a failing state. So it requires a higher level of conversation and thinking around what we're seeing now. It's really a symptom of the problem. We were already facing a housing crisis pre-pandemic, and there were many factors that contributed to the lack of housing delivery. the COVID-19 pandemic has and will have a disproportionate impact on poor black people. Rising unemployment in the informal sector, evictions of backyard dwellers, and evictions on state and private-owned land in general have all contributed to land occupation. So we cannot really look at one or two incidences of land occupation and pinpoint it to region. We have to look at the root causes of poverty, structural inequality, and the intentional policies and conduct of the state that continues to oppress black people and criminalize poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a much broader question.
Yeah. So I think the important follow-up question then is, we understand there's a genuine need for housing, right? And there are thousands of people already on this government waiting list for a government house. But, you know, the land inversions that we are seeing, we are wondering, will this not hamper the existing government housing projects? And will it not be detrimental for others waiting for housing? Because suddenly now people might feel almost entitled to, you know, a piece of land somewhere, and they can just sort of like take any piece of land, and that piece of land may even have been earmarked for a future housing project.
I hear you, but I just wanna come back to this, you know, the issue of land occupations and what is being termed land invasion. And, you know, one of the key drivers of inequalities is the reinforcement of dominant cultural narratives that seeks to undermine fairness, tolerance, and inclusion. So this constant narrative of land invasion is one such dominant cultural narrative that seeks to criminalize and demonize the plight of poor and the homeless. So, you know, in terms of our law, everyone has a right to housing. Everyone has a right not to be evicted from their homes or have their homes demolished without a court order. You know, the Constitution is clear on that. Everyone also has a right to dignity and equality. So this narrative of land invasions and land invaders therefore seeks to undermine fairness, tolerance, and inclusion of people that are desperately in need of housing, desperately in need of shelter, particularly now in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we really need to shift that narrative, and the state must bear the responsibility of shifting that narrative rather than being propagators of that narrative. So I'd like to shy away of using words such as land invasion, land occupation of people that are desperately in need of land. It's not encouraging people to take ownership. It's also understanding and appreciating their plight, their struggle, to find shelter, to find a home. There is, as you rightly say, a huge backlog in housing. But it's up to the state to actually put measures in place. And in these times, to develop short, long-term policies, to actually really look at their policies and their issues rather than, you know, as I said, criminalizing those people that are actually desperately in need of housing.
Okay, I understand that there's an ideological conversation and also a conversation of not using language that criminalizes people who are essentially following or pursuing their constitutional right in our democracy. But we are talking about the push and pull factors, and of course when there's an action there will be, you know, there will be a consequence, and we're just wondering how this might impact on existing land. Oh, not land housing projects, sorry, that our government, whether at a national, provincial, or city level, might be executing.
I think maybe if I can come in, just to say, I think one of the things that was, I think you're correct to say, some of the pieces of land that have been recently invaded or occupied were earmarked for housing opportunities. But then, how do we start to look at issues around communication and transparency in terms of some of the current and future housing programs being planned by government? Because the situation whereby a community member will ask us as an NGO, what is planned for this piece of land that is next to my neighborhood? A lot of crime is happening in this piece of land, and people don't know what is planned in some of these cases.
Hmm.
In terms of some of the open pieces of land within these neighborhoods. Then we are saying, how can government stop to politicize this issue of access to housing? But then be clear in terms of communication and have a consistent message between City of Cape Town, the provincial government, and the national government. Because for now, the messages are not consistent, and at times they are confusing to the general public.
Our guests, we just quickly have to go for an ad break. Please stay with us. I still have more questions for you. It's a very interesting conversation, helping us, of course, to understand the context as well as the driving factors behind it.
Solid Barbecue has the following amazing deals now available until the end of August for only 50 Rand each at the Rhinum store. Egg fried rice, chicken hakka noodles, chicken malai kebab chips and plain naan, tandoori chicken kebab chips and plain naan, chicken curry with two plain naan, chicken dal with two plain naan, chicken kalapuri with two plain naan. All these are now only 50 Rand each and only available at Sali's Barbecue Rylands at number 28 Pine Road. Phone 021-633-0363. That's 021-633-0363.
Did you know that your favorite radio station is now on WhatsApp? That's right, you can add BOC on WhatsApp to comment on our shows. All you have to do is add the number 072-238-0712. That's 072-238-0712. So add us now and join the conversation on BOC.
Welcome back to the show with myself, Ezid Kamaldin. We now continue our conversation with our guests, Cheryl from the Legal Resources Center and Zama from the Development Action Group. Cheryl or Zama, were there anything else you wanted to add to our last question before I continue with our next questions?
I think maybe to add, if you look at upgrading of the informal settlements for those who are lucky to get within the housing program, it can take up to between 11 and 18 years. For example, take a Joe Slovo informal settlement in Langa. That informal settlement has been in the process of being developed, I think, for the past 15 years or so. So, and those who are waiting, at times they are in the dark in terms of how and when things are should be happening from the side of government.
Okay.
Hence, I think the need for transparency, but also building the trust. The trust has been broken between those in positions of power and the general public.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, anything from your side that you might want to add?
Yeah, I echo those sentiments, Osama, and also add that if you do have to understand the constraints by presented to local government, provincial, national government in terms of housing delivery.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate those.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you are a local authority that is responsible for housing. You're the provincial authority that is responsible for housing. And you have to make plans and you have to take steps to ensure that there's accelerated delivery of housing. But there's a lot of developments that have happened in the city of Cape Town Metropole. And a lot of that has not been inclusive of low-cost housing. So while you applaud, developing townships and redeveloping townships and providing basic services and infrastructure, you have to look at really planning around creating viable housing options for people from the lower income group and for homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that, and it's not just on the city of Cape Town, I don't think that government as a whole has addressed the issue on a national level. And I think that at this point in time when we are facing an economic crisis, one that will probably widen the inequality gap.
Yeah.
You have to take extraordinary measures. It's not for us to find the answers for government. It's for government to make a concerted effort, and also government to have the political will to actually address these, to plan for these.
Thank you, Cheryl. Cheryl, I have more questions. I'm sorry, I do have more questions, and we have two more minutes with you, because I would like to encourage you to, I know it's a big question, these are big questions, it needs more time, but we do have a time constraint on the radio show, and I really want us to bring across an understanding, you know. The other question a lot of people keep talking about is politics. They want to know, is there a political undertone at play here? For example, we every now and then hear, for example, the economic freedom fighters encouraging people, you know, to go onto land and take back the land. But is there a political undertone at play here? And also we've got all these kind of like things between the DA and the ANC in the Western Cape, you know, the mudslinging between those two political parties using land and housing very often as part of their political attacks against each other. What do you make of the political undertone, and is there even a political undertone at play here?
I think maybe if I can start, I started by saying we need as a collective to rethink the approach of addressing the housing crisis. I think the land invasions or occupations are not only happening in the city of Cape Town. You go to Durban, you go to Joburg, people are tired. People have been waiting, not knowing what is happening. Hence, it's not only about the city of Cape Town. It's about different governments, different spheres of government coming together to say, look, this is how. And the how part should not only be thought through by a few politicians, but the people who have been in the process of co-creating solutions. For example, there's backyarders. Those people have not been supported for quite some time. And now we see micro-developers claiming the space. So we are saying it's not about politics. Hence we are saying there should be clear messages and not to politicize the plight of those.
But is it being politicized? It's obviously being politicized. Cheryl, do you have a response before we have to break? Do you have a response to that, please?
So look, obviously there's political undertones, and there's politicians that will use this to their advantage to garner support of their constituents. We can't be naive about that. But as civil society organizations, we would, as Rama said, we would encourage politicians at this particular time to stop cheap politicking and to look at the needs of the poor working class that are in desperate need of housing.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to go for now. We do have more guests that we want to bring on. I want to thank both of you. We are now going to speak to the City of Cape Town. Thank you so much, Zama and Cheryl. Thank you for joining us.
You're
on
welcome.
Burning Issue.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thanks,
bye. Highlight. Assalamu alaikum. This is Joe Highlight coming to you live here from Highlight Job Buyers. The sale is here and the bargains are here. We won't stop the bargains and we won't stop the sales. And Divatika Creative Mutkri. Yes, we are now offering you a fantastic opportunity. We will recover your lawn suite free of charge. That's right, free of charge. All you have to do is purchase the material from our designer collection and we will do the rest. And this is an offer you can't refuse. Find us in Haji Ibrahim Crescent, Athlone Industria, 638-5136, and Diva Tikha Creative Mutkere.
Are you struggling to find quality fresh seafood without the what is that smell? We have traveled the world to search for the best premium seafood so that you don't have to. From Argentina to the Far East, we bring you the widest range of the most succulent prawns, calamari, Norwegian salmon, and so much more. Our seafood is responsibly and sustainably sourced. Visit our online store at captainhaddock.co.za and have a seafood feast with us.
Welcome back to Burning Issue with myself, Yazid Kamaldin. We've had some interesting conversations on a very complex situation, the land occupations in various parts of the city and the province. And of course, as you heard, it's a nationwide thing. It's happening in many parts of the country. So we are wanting to speak, of course, to our government officials as well. We've spoken to NGOs. We've spoken to local people on the ground. I'm now going to welcome to the show Tertius Simmers. He's the MEC for Human Settlements at the Western Cape Government. Tertius, good evening and welcome to Burning Issue.
Good evening, Yazid. Good evening to all the Western Cape listeners.
Great. Look, Tertius, what's the government doing about the land invasions? Tell our listeners what's been happening from a government perspective. We've heard from people on the ground saying there's poverty that's driving it, there's the backyard dweller situation, there are major driving forces in the economy that's pushing people, you know, out of their homes and onto pieces of land where they need to make ends meet. But tell us, what has been the Western Cape government's response to this?
Well, Aziz, firstly, let me just make it crystal clear that the land invaders or the land invasions over the past 2 weeks, there's a portion of it that are people that have a real need, but there are those that are opportunistic and with really some criminal intent in a lot of these invasions. That's the one part. The secondary part is we have actually called as the provincial government on SAPs to do what they are supposed to do, which is act in the interest of the broader citizens of the city of Cape Town, but also of our province, because they actually need to prevent, combat, and investigate crime, because in many of these invasions, we have actually seen that there are known figures who are actually leading these invasions, and we've also been following and tracking what's happening on social media. That's the one part, but also where we have seen the destruction of infrastructure. I mean, park equipment of in certain areas has been destroyed while invaders were attempting to invade a portion of land. And we've also called on SAPs to actually arrest these people, and we've called on the courts that they also need to act, because how else will we stop what was happening? Because all these poor portions of land over the last 2 weeks that has been invaded, the bulk of them have been earmarked for human settlements development. And the problem now is that as a provincial government, together with the city of Cape Town, our own planning is now set further back, and our law-abiding citizens who are also qualifying beneficiaries on the beneficiary waiting list of the Western Cape government are now in a position where they're going to seemingly have to wait a bit longer, because we're going to sort out the land that was invaded. Thirdly, we are well aware that there's been budgetary cuts by the National Department, to all relevant departments. My department is one of them, I mean. But looking at alternative methods to actually, how can we accelerate the delivery of housing opportunities to qualifying beneficiaries, and also to build a communication line with our communities. And I mean, I've been actively busy since last year in the metro area, engaging various communities, updating them on project timelines and accelerating certain project timelines.
Okay, I also have questions, Tertius. I understand that you have a lot of information you want to share, but we need to keep this conversation going. I mean, I just want to add to your point that you were talking about criminal elements. I'm looking at a story that was published on the 23rd of July, and it talks about, the headline reads, "Teachers and pupils in tears as land protesters gut the new school." And the story goes on to say two schools and a municipal refuse truck were set alight in Joe Slovo Park in Milnerton in protest believed to relate to land occupations. So can you tell us a bit more about your understanding or investigations into the criminal element? What are the criminal elements driving the land invasions that we are seeing in our province?
Well, look, this is an anomaly that is also playing itself out in Gauteng, and we are seeing similar tentacles and similar traits as Gauteng, and these traits are, you have a group of individuals who are seemingly leading these invasions, But what happens behind the scenes is what we are busy uncovering at the moment, more so in the metro area, is where people are actually being asked, in first instance, money for some of these parcels of land, and we picked that up in Swartland municipality 3 weeks ago, where this is an issue that became very pertinent, because once you start engaging some of these individuals who have moved down to a piece of vacant land, they were duped into believing that the national government or the provincial government has given permission, but that they apparently need to give a X amount, and it varies from 500 rand and up into 3,000-4,000 rand for a portion of land. And that's the one portion of criminality that we've observed, and we are gathering all the information and data. Secondly, it's the case like you just alluded to. I mean, if there's a genuine need, why do you burn down social infrastructure like a school? It doesn't make sense. And the difference between the Western Cape and Gauteng's invasions are, ours are a lot more militant and a lot more destructive, which means there's a political narrative or undertone of trying to make this province and areas in this province, like the state of Cape Town, ungovernable through the narrative that has been spewed out over social media by specific political parties, actually inciting and encouraging people to even take up and invade private land. And we are picking that up on social media as well. So it's clear criminal intent. It's far beyond a basic human need.
So it's really the opportunism as well that people are catching on to, or rather people are latching on to the desperation, and they're seeing that as an opportunity and saying to someone, give me 500 rand and you can own a piece of land. That's crazy.
No, it's not crazy. It might sound crazy to you and me, but if an individual comes and he tries to dupe you into buying or paying them occupancy rent, as some of these people call it, people actually go for it. And some of the people actually take their last bit of SASSA money or grant money to do that. And we've picked it up in areas, in other non-metro municipal areas in the Western Cape. And that's why we're taking this objective that calling on our community to actually sensitize themselves and be part of the solution with government, as we call them, SAPs and the courts, to do what they are supposed to do.
Yeah.
But our communities are losing out big time because of this.
Okay. Look, our NGOs, of course, have told us that they believe that the government's not doing enough in terms of communicating with people, for example, what is going to be happening on certain parcels of land. That is why people feel that they can just go and stay there and invade. Then there's also been sort of thoughts that have been shared that government, while government has done quite a bit, you know, there's still so much that needs to be done. Talk to us about government's provision of housing in the province. What's been happening around that?
Well, firstly, the provision of housing opportunities for the next 5 years was fairly set on track. We normally deliver anything between 30 to 36,000 housing opportunities across the Western Cape.
Is that per year?
Top structures.
Is that per year? That or how does that, when you say 36,000, because we're measuring also delivery now, you know?
Yeah, that's delivery output per year, which means if I talk about a housing opportunity, it means either a service site or a top structure or other forms of assistance for individuals through various grants in the human settlements family to obtain a housing opportunity. And just to give an example of the impact of the recent land invasions for the city, we've lost in the last 18 months 400 hectares. Now that's the equivalent of literally 1 year's housing opportunities that we are not going to see happen.
Okay. Can I just clarify something for one of our listeners? Listeners, by the way, Shukran, thank you so much for your WhatsApp messages. I am seeing it. We just haven't had a chance to get to it. But listener 4348 says, it is not fair that people who are already on the waiting list for so long have to wait longer because of the land invasion will be getting houses first. Can we just set that straight? Did you say, or is it correct to think that people who invade land will now get a house first?
I've said it before and I will say it pertinently to the voice of the Cape listeners. I do not, as a provincial minister in this province, entertain individuals who try to jump the queue by invading land. My commitment is to those law-abiding citizens that are on our beneficiary waiting list, and that some of them have been waiting decades, they are the ones who I will work with. They are the ones who I will ensure get a housing opportunity in my term as a minister. So I can assure our listeners that.
And I mean, beyond just your term, I mean, isn't it about justice, irrespective of who the politician is? I mean, that is only, it makes sense to say that if you've been on the waiting list and somebody else joins the waiting list, they have to wait as you have.
That's correct, and even beyond my term, I mean, remember, we have a housing allocation policy in each municipality, and even as a province, that caters just for voted on the housing beneficiary lists, and it clarifies who gets prioritized, even beyond my term, and hence I'm calling on the community and the listeners tonight to work with me and my department and the provincial government to ensure that people don't invade the land, because they are actually prolonging your opportunity as a possible beneficiary on a site. And that's why it's my call to our communities to work with me, my department, and the provincial government.
I've got another question from listener 1532. Listener, I can see that you are typing. Maybe you're sending another question, but I'm going to read out what you have sent already. The listener says, I'm currently renting a house for 3,000 Rand in Delft. My husband's salary got cut because of COVID-19. The owner of the house said I must be out by the end of July. I'm 12 years on the waiting list for a house. There are people that pay their way to get a house that have been on the list for only 6 years. That is the first point the listener wants to make, and you can also talk to that point as a government official. The second point the listener makes is, the land that was taken, why can't people make use of it? And this is now speaking about land that was taken that was open. Now the listener is saying, why can't that land be used? Because people are robbed and raped on that land, and the government only builds houses when it comes to voting. Okay, so I think let's tackle the question separately. The first one is around the allegation of the listener saying that she's been on the waiting list for 13 years. Another person she believes was on the list for 6 years, got a house, and apparently or allegedly paid their way to get a house. What would your government response be to that?
Well, firstly, if I can, to the listener, if she's paying rent at the moment, we are on the level 3. The individual from whom you are renting, or the landlord, he legally may not evict you. It's illegal. He won't even get an eviction order at the High Court should he do so. So he's got no right to actually evict you. The allegation of paying for people to now jump the queue, if there are such allegations, and the listener can provide me with that individual's details, believe me, I can go back, check on the system, because remember, all municipalities are linked to the provincial.
Look, I just also want to add, information that the listener has just sent now. She's saying she's renting an RDP house that the owner got last year.
Okay. At the moment, I'm happy she's clarified exactly what type of house she's renting. So, A, we can't put you out. B, legally, a person is not supposed to sell their house in 8 years' time, but the law is currently grey on the rental of housing, of RDP houses. I have asked a legal opinion, and I will be doing a forensic audit very soon of specific projects across the province, to see who is currently living in those houses versus who the original beneficiary was, should they differ. And then obviously I will get a legal opinion to tell me what I want to do, because if you are renting out the RDP house, this in theory against the law, because you got the house because you identified a need that you have.
Okay.
And that need clearly no longer exists.
Look, I don't want us to get too sidetracked into the RDP house conversation. Can you quickly, briefly answer, because we have another guest that I need to welcome to the show. He's also from the local government. Can you just talk to the point of the concern that the listener has raised around the empty land where people are robbed and raped? And the person is saying, well, why doesn't the government use that land, i.e. build houses on there? I mean, obviously we can't build a house in every single piece of empty land.
I agree with you. The problem is, once land is invaded, it makes the provision of bulk services, because before you even build a house, you must provide bulk services on a lot of these vast pockets of land. But once it's invaded, it makes it so difficult to deliver bulk services. And when people are on that land, some of them, you know, they do not either want to move, or even move, you know, you need to engage them continuously, but the cost of then servicing that site, even before erecting top structures, it becomes phenomenally expensive.
Okay.
Hence, the request people should not invade land earmarked for human settlements development.
Okay. I now want to welcome Malusi Boyes, the Mayoral Committee Member for Human Settlements at the City of Cape Town. Malusi, good evening and welcome to Burning Issue.
Good evening, and good evening to Minister, and good evening to the listeners.
Malusi, can you talk to us about the city's response to what we've seen in our city over the last few weeks around land invasions? It must be quite a headache for the city, but tell us what you are doing about it.
I mean, we're confronted with an excessive in from different communities on people attempting to invade land. If I make an example, on an ordinary year, we normally deal with 15,000 invasions. But within the past month, we have dealt with more than 30,000 invasions that have happened in terms of structures. I mean, in Kraaifontein alone, today they were putting up pegs over the past 2 days that were more than 21,500. You know, you can see that this is well orchestrated. There's an aggression to it. But I must say, we're getting good support from the provincial government through human settlements, and also the premier and the province entirely. We're getting good support. Where we are not getting support fully is from South African Police Service, and we are calling on them, even from the national office, for them to support us through this, because it does not only affect a piece of land, it affects those people who have been waiting for a very long time and patiently on our waiting list, as we have you know, that have come to the show to express the big chunk of people that are on our database. So there are those good citizens who have decided not to go and protest and bend tires, but they followed due process of registering on our database. Now those people are now, those opportunities are being eroded by this act of criminality.
Okay. I think we need to go for an ad break. I want to keep you both on the line because we want to share with our listeners, of course, what our different spheres of government is doing. But I also want to know how things are going with the national government. After the break, we'll continue with our questions. Welcome back to The Burning Issue with myself, Yazid Kamaldin. We have on the line Malusi Boyes, the Mayoral Committee Member for Human Settlements at the City of Cape Town. We also have Tertius Simmers, he's the MEC for Human Settlements at the Western Cape Government. Malusi, just to clarify, when you talked about the SAPS, what exactly is it that they are not doing, or what is it that you expect them to do?
Firstly, I'm expecting them to arrest people because they're doing this thing, and these gatherings are happening during gay pride line. I mean, if you look at it, the regulations are very clear. There's no gathering permitted. Why are they not acting? Because now we have people that are gathering. We still have lockdown regulations, they're still in place. Why are they not arresting these people who are gathering? That's point number one. Number two, everywhere, I mean, if you have seen the visuals in Kraaifontein over the past week and some other areas, why are there no arrests in this particular incident? Thirdly, public order police is supposed to be everywhere. Where we are doing operations in some of the areas, they're not there, you know, and that is their primary responsibility. So this is why we have, even when we met the Human Settlements Minister, myself and the Mayor, we emphasized this point that he must talk to her colleagues and come up with, because soldiers are supposed to be visible. Are they visible? The answer is no.
So okay.
So that is why I'm saying the other sphere of government, which is not national government, is not playing its full role and responsibility on this matter. I'm not saying they're not assisting in some of the instances, but they need to make sure that they enforce law enforcement in our community.
I want to now bring in the national government role, and either guest can answer. I mean, what has the engagement been like with national government on this? I mean, is there even political will to effectively tackle this problem in the Western Cape? Either guest can answer first.
I'll go first. Starting this interview, I had a two-hour discussion with the national minister regarding this matter, and the political role is there. The resort, I did ask her to actually engage a fellow colleagues at national level, more so Minister Becky Trele, because SAPS needs to come to the party here, and from a human settlements family perspective, we will be endeavouring, together with the city of Cape Town, to legally take action and to legally make examples of these leaders who are leading these land invasions.
Are you saying that you're going to the courts?
Yes, that is one part of the legal approach, but to approach the court, you must have a good case study, and you also need to ensure that your case will be an example that can be utilized in other areas as well, and we are busy with that at the moment. And I know the city of Cape Town and Maluseke and coming here, I know they are also looking at their legal avenues to do that, because remember, we do live in a constitutional state and the rule of law is supreme. So whatever your actions is, it must be bound by the law and processes of law.
Okay. I have a follow-up question on that, if you don't mind. I mean, Malusi, you can also answer to this question. I really just have to ask this. I mean, going to the courts, seeking help from the SAP is just to get clarity on this. I mean, please tell me that this is not, or is this about criminalizing poverty, or is this about tackling the criminals? We are not saying that poor people and poverty, you know, is being criminalized, because it's easy just to arrest people who really actually have maybe a desperate need for housing, shelter, security, in a world that is otherwise hostile to them. The backyard dwellers, they're being kicked out of the backyard. We've heard from one listener saying that she pays 3,000 rand for an RDP house and she's being asked to leave. You know, I mean, let's just ask that question. Let's understand what is this about. Is this about criminalizing poverty, or is it about tackling criminals? Anyone can answer, sure.
Can I go?
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by criminalizing poverty. I just want to make a simple example. If you have, you ride on Baden Powell, the area that has been recently invaded, you ride on Malibongwe Drive on your way to Danun. Look at the cars that are parked next to these informal structures. It's expensive vehicles. Each and every of those units have a satellite dish. What does that mean? So there's no direct link to it. I'm not saying all those people who are there, they are not vulnerable. There are those special cases of people who are in dire need of our assistance. But majority of the time, we realize, and I think I got in whilst the minister was explaining, majority of the time it's people who have released opportunities that have been given to them. I mean, there's a huge development in Forest Village that is championed by the province. If you go to Facebook now, people have advertised the same units that we handed over to them. They advertise it the same day. So is this about being poor? No. Because part of the challenge is what I tag as shack farming, where people invade land, and it's people who have money, they invade, and in order for them to lease it to other people. That's why it's an informal economy. And this is where we need to understand what is the rationale behind it.
Look, thank you so much for giving us that information, because I think very often we have I'm speaking for myself, limited understanding of the dynamics at play, you know. I mean, I didn't even know about this concept of subletting land illegally that you are occupying. I mean, so thank you for that. I mean, I also just want to tell you and our listeners that we have invited the National Minister of Human Settlements, Lindiwe Sisulu, onto the show, but we didn't get any response. But I think we're getting a lot of government input here as we speak. You know, talk to us about direct engagement with people who are invading land, because our guests from the civil society sector have said to us that they believe government could do a better job in communicating with the public about the land that they are invading and telling them that that land could potentially be, you know, land earmarked for housing. So tell us, talk to us about direct engagement with people who are invading as opposed to just wanting to arrest them. What else is being done?
Just before the minister will conclude, I just want to make two examples in the main. At Empolweni, there was a story of a guy who was naked in that area. I just wanted to remind you.
Necklaced?
Naked.
Naked, oh.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Very different.
Along Baden-Powell. Mm-hmm. That particular precinct, it's earmarked for an expansion of the treatment plant across the road. That project is worth 162 million. What has happened now? Land invaded. It's gone down the drain. Along that same area, there's an Nkanini project there worth 500 million rand, 11,000 housing opportunities, fully invaded. What is going to happen now? Gone down the drain. Last week in Khayelitsha, where we engage, and these communities that I'm talking about, it's communities that we have engaged intensively. In Khayelitsha, we lost 420 housing opportunities. Did we consult that community? We have had a number of meetings. Did we communicate with Nkanini community? We have had a number of engagement. What triggers this? Because that's a primary question. It's individuals who are not even on our waiting list. It's young kids who are burning tires because they know very well people that we're prioritizing is the vulnerable. Your elderly, your disabled, and child-headed households. Now, they don't fit in that category. What do? They opt to invade and not jeopardize the opportunities that are supposed to be given to good citizens that have been waiting. Over to you, Minister.
I just want to say that you have a very tough job because I understand a lot of the challenges, you know, and when I ask you a tough question, I'm also just doing my job. But I can honestly say, I'm looking at the statistics. Another housing project, 1.3 billion rand worth of housing projects under threat from land invasions. People who, of course, just want to take from the government as opposed to wait in line for their house. Okay, MEC, did you want to also respond?
Yes, just on what my colleague Malusi has said, together with the City of Cape Town, we have actively over the last 18 months engaged various communities regarding provincial and city-led projects, updating them up to two times in the last 18 months. So for civil society to say that there's not sufficient communication, that is incorrect. Then one also needs to understand that in each of these communities, they normally elect a structure that represents their community when it comes to human settlements. It's called the Project Steering Committee. And we continuously, on a monthly basis, communicate through these structures as well. So as Malusi has alluded to, everything that we've observed happening in the metro area over the last 2 weeks, it's purely criminal because there's no lack of communication. We're even utilizing technology to reach our possible beneficiaries through Facebook and so forth. So it's not that government is going above and beyond the normal approach of communication. And hence, my repeated call that the community start working with us, with the city, let's stop these further land invasions because ultimately projects are earmarked for a lot of these parcels of land. Your councils are aware of it. Your project steering committees are aware of it. Don't let criminals who want to now capitalize on your living conditions stop the future improvement of the quality of your life.
Look, I was just giving you the right of reply there because it is something that an allegation or a comment that had been leveled against the government. I'd like to also just to go back to the WhatsApp messages because this gives you a sense of what citizens are saying, and it's such an important engagement on this show at least to ensure that our citizens connect with our government and other officials and even civil society organizations that say that they of course want to work towards improving our society. Listener 8691 shares this opinion, and of course government officials on the line, you don't have to respond to every question or every message that comes through, but you are more than welcome to also share your opinion. So listener 8691 shares saying government makes owning a house in Cape Town so unrealistically expensive to the point that people are forced to occupy land illegally. They also drag their feet to build adequate low-cost housing. I think I would actually like to hear from our government officials on the feelings or the thoughts that people have that government is dragging their feet to build adequate low-cost housing. I mean, is it maybe that we just have too big a need and that it might seem like government isn't doing enough too fast?
Okay, if I may come in, just quickly, there's something that you need to understand, and I think so that the citizens can also feed into themselves. Housing, as in nature, it's grant funded. Now, the only time on any delivery or units that you can build are based on the grant that you receive. Now, in the intervening period, we have received a cut of 190 odd million rand. Now, what does that translate to? In the previous years, I was able as a city to produce more than 4,500 housing opportunities per financial year. What is the implication of what is happening now in these budget cuts? It's going to make us build less than 2,000 units. There's a demand of more than 340,000 people that are on our waiting list. Now, there is no money where we can get someone. We only get funded by the grant that we receive from national government. Now, when national government cuts our budget by more than 50%, what is the expectation? Are we expected to meet the same demand with less budget? It can never be.
Okay, thank you. Our listener 0115, in fact, two of our listeners are now going to or have alluded to what is a perception, and some people might say that it is a perception that discriminates against people from elsewhere. Listener 0115 says, one of the major problems is the political influx of people from the Eastern Cape to Cape Town to bolster the ANC and EFF parties. This is creating tremendous pressure on housing and results in shortage of jobs for Capetonians. And then listener 0595 says, land invasion is political. There are people who are waiting for 30 years to be on a list for a house, but if you go to the starter homes in Delft or the Cape Flats, most of the occupants are youngsters or single people from outside our provinces. Why does this perception persist that it's people from outside of Cape Town or the Western Cape that are here to take houses from locals? Do you guys, can you confirm that? Is it mostly people?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what outside means. Because across this country, we serve South Africans. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know we still it is us and them. Because what happens is people that are on our waiting list, it's people who have registered, and that's the process in which we follow. I mean, province even currently is working on a more sophisticated manner where they want to utilize an app in terms of people accessing housing opportunities. So I don't know who are the outsiders. If it's the foreign nationals that they are referring to, well, what normally happens that
Malusi, they're referring specifically to people from other provinces and specifically even the Eastern Cape. I mean, this is an old argument. It keeps coming up when we talk about land and housing.
It's a flawed argument. And I'll tell you why I'm saying it's a flawed argument. I'm saying it's a flawed argument primarily because here we are building one nation. And now, immediately we go back to segregation, then I can't participate in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't participate because that is as has been entrenched over the years by apartheid government.
By the Bantustan mentality.
In terms of dividing us. Now, I don't want to participate on such conversation.
Okay.
Because here we're working on social cohesion, we're working on building a nation. Now, we have people of different races working in different provinces. Now, immediately we're going to now start saying this is us and them. Then it means we are igniting a fight that we'll never be able to deal with.
Yeah. Look, I think what is very evident coming from our listeners is that evictions are happening. Even though the government has said that there should be no evictions under the lockdown, I mean, I just got a message from another listener. They sent the message saying, sitting here worried, I don't know what to do. You packed all our stuff together here by my granny, and I don't know where we're going. So it's about addressing those issues as well, right? I mean, isn't that part of the solution, going to the cause of the problem?
I can come in here. Look, I do concur with you, but the problem is that the listener who sent in that message has got rights. And once again, the police are supposed to enforce the alert level 3 regulations prohibiting evictions. My advice to that listener would be, if he or she has a housing need or an urgent housing need, by contact with a relevant ward councillor, and the process, the due processes can follow. Because we also need to acknowledge that many a times government empowers our communities, but sadly many a times when it comes to an urgent matter, the assistance which they have been afforded in the past, which is part of empowering them, does not kick in, unfortunately, because human nature takes over. But I need to emphasize, we're under alert level 3. You are not supposed to be evicted.
Mm-hmm.
I've echoed this many a times. Once again, another proof the police are not doing what they are supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So we need to wrap up with yourselves now, because we have someone from the Werkman's attorneys coming up after this. We are going to go for a quick ad break. I want to thank you so much for sharing, of course, the work that you are doing as the city and the province. Thanking Malusi Boy, the Mayoral Committee Member for Human Settlements at the City of Cape Town, and Tertius Simmers, the MEC for Human Settlements. Thank you so much for your time on Burning Issue.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you for the invitation.
Welcome back to The Burning Issue with myself, Yazid Kamaldin. We are now going to welcome Anele Ngidi to the show. Anele is with Werkman's attorneys. Anele, good evening and welcome to Burning Issue.
Thank you very much, Yazid. Thank you for having me tonight. It's a pleasure to be with everyone and the listeners. Good evening to the listeners as well.
Great. So, Anele, just to put you in the picture, this evening we have already spoken to activists, we have spoken to people who work in government, and of course we want to now share a bit of information around the legalities on the land invasions. We've also talked to someone who says that the wording is completely incorrect. She doesn't believe that this is land invasions, because under our constitution we all have the right to housing and, you know, all and everything else. Let's talk about the law. Let's talk about the Constitution, Anele. In light of the Constitution and our right as citizens of South Africa, what does the law say around land invasions?
So I think the best place to start off is obviously unpacking what Section 25 and Section 26 of the Constitution actually provide to citizens. So Section 25, what Section 25 says is that everyone has the right to not be deprived of their property. And the law does not permit an arbitrary deprivation of property. So what that actually means is that no one can arbitrarily deprive you as a lawful property owner of your property. This is not an absolute right, which means that you have a right to property, like a right to access to water or access to education. It means that the Constitution protects you as a property owner from having your property deprived from you in an arbitrary manner. Then second to that is Section 26, which is the right to access to adequate housing. So those two are separate in that it recognizes that as a property owner, your property must be protected under the Constitution. And concomitant to that is that everyone should have the right to access to adequate housing. And that's obviously distinguishable from owning property in the sense of a title deed that says that Earth X, Y, Z belongs to X. And Section 26 rather says that you have the right to be given access to adequate housing. So when we talk about are people actually permitted to unlawfully occupy your property, Section 25 actually does come to the rescue of landowners in that it specifically prohibits the arbitrary deprivation of one's property.
Mm-hmm. And what does it say, though, in light of public land? Because that's what we're seeing a lot of at the moment. People taking over or occupying public land, government-owned land?
So the same applies to public land as well. The Constitution doesn't distinguish between privately owned land and state-owned land, because obviously state-owned land as a whole is held in the custody of the state and is for the benefit of everyone. So when people take it upon themselves to actually occupy state property, it's actually not permitted, because the law or Section 25 doesn't distinguish between the state owner or a private owner, and that the same protection that is given to a private landowner is available to the state when its properties are being invaded. So the actual occupation of state-owned land is not permitted as well in terms of the Act, the Constitution, sorry.
So what we're seeing is in fact criminal. It's against the Constitution.
Correct. It's unlawful behavior that goes against the Constitution. And just because the property is in the hands of the state does not mean that it's a free-for-all and it's a property that can be taken by anyone. There's a process that needs to be applied when determining whether or not a property is suitable for human occupation. There are a number of considerations that need to be taken into consideration, such as spatial planning, what is the property currently zoned for, is this going to be a development or a property that falls under the land reform arm, or is it the distribution, or is it restitution? There are a number of factors that government applies itself when it determines what is the suitability of this particular property. So when the community or people at large take that into their hands, they take away the state's power or the state's ability to adequately allocate property based on what the community's needs are.
I mean, also something that you said earlier on that stood out for me, two words, for everyone, not for an individual, not for a group of individuals, for everyone. So when people invade land, it's kind of like saying, this is just for us, this is not for everyone.
Correct. It's a form of self-help, and as one of your previous guests said, it flies against the rule of law. And when we start encouraging behavior where people can take the law into their own hands, it's a very slippery slope, and it undermines the rule of law, and it promotes anarchy in a number of areas in society and just in general, where we are unable to plan properly because you can't earmark a particular property for development or for a sale or for anything, because we are all operating under the apprehension that the property might be overtaken or invaded overnight. So it is quite important that people adhere to the rule of law and understand that this type of behavior is actually not sanctioned by the Constitution.
I mean, I've heard those fears. There are people who talk about not wanting to buy land or invest in land in South Africa because it could be invaded and the government will do nothing. I mean, this is the kind of thinking that we hear. People talk about, no, rather buy land in another country, you know, invest somewhere else. So there's a bigger impact. There's an economic impact. Land invasions has an economic impact then as well, because if people begin to feel unsafe or insecure in the country, they just won't put their money in the land in the country.
Definitely. And as Worksmen, we've had a number of international and both local clients who are very concerned about this repeated pattern of behavior. And we as lawyers can only give assurances to a certain degree, where we give them practical steps to implement when it comes to safeguarding their property. But we have definitely witnessed at Worksmen's Attorneys a decline or a reluctance to invest in property in South Africa, purely because of this particular type of behavior. And we're also experiencing amongst our clients, a number of clients who are coming to us and saying, but we have a deal that is on the table, we are unable to get investment because right next to our business park there is an informal settlement that has established itself over the last couple of months. So it does have an adverse impact on economy and the market and confidence in the certainty, because what investors like to hear is that there's certainty in law and that there's certainty that the law will be implemented correctly. But unfortunately, we do not have, there seems to be a habit or a pattern of behavior where people are not abiding to what the law says.
Mm-hmm. Now, look, the other thing is, of course, we live in a democracy, and part of living in a democracy is that we have to be humanist. We need to put people also very much, you know, the law should be about protecting people. Yes, we are protecting individual, I mean, property rights and state property rights. But when we see cases go to the courts, often it gets very complex, and we've seen judges and magistrates rule in the favor sometimes of land occupiers, of land invaders, saying that, you know, the constitution and the rights of people and the humanist approach is the route to take. And I mean, what do you make of that? I mean, why is it so complex when a case or a land invasion case sometimes gets before the courts? Why is it sometimes so complex?
So what the courts have to look at when they are tasked with determining whether or not an eviction should be granted or an interdict that is going to lead to an eviction is going to be granted is what is going to happen to those people. So they have a test that the courts need to apply, which is it just an equitable to evict or to grant that particular order that is going to result in this in people being displaced. And these considerations are obviously borne by our the history that you come from, where evictions could be done summarily and you could be told to leave overnight. So this consideration has been implemented to safeguard against that particular mischief that we saw so much of during before our democracy. So this the introduction of this particular requirement has now required courts to interrogate the motive of the eviction and what is going to happen to those individuals who are going to be affected by the eviction order. And that's where things tend to fall apart, in that the state or the property owner or even the occupiers are unable to say that they've got nowhere to go. The municipality does not have, is unable to provide them with temporary accommodation, or the state does not have funds to absorb these particular individuals into the existing housing schemes. So when the courts have to ask, is it just and equitable? Is this eviction order going to result in homelessness or people being displaced? That is where people are unable to give courts a satisfactory answer that allow them to give effect or grant the particular order that is required. So that is where most cases do tend to fall apart, because there is no step, or there is a very little provision for providing people who are going to be displaced in terms of these land invasions with alternative accommodation that will ensure that people's dignity are maintained and people are moved effectively and people are actually kept safe.
Mm-hmm. So the follow-up question to that, just for clarity, I mean, is the government obliged to provide land occupiers with an alternative form of accommodation?
So the answer to that question would be, who bears the duty in terms of the constitution to provide access to adequate housing? And that does lie with the state. So whenever these questions arise, the problem is that the state does not have the necessary infrastructure and budget to accommodate these individuals. The duty, and the courts have opined on this on numerous occasions, the duty to provide occupiers with alternative accommodation does lie with the state and not with the property owner.
Okay. So when it comes to recourse, let me just go back to, because before I interviewed you, we talked to the MEC for Human Settlements here in the Western Cape, and he talked about the fact that they're going to go to court, they are going to seek legal action, you know, to ensure that they protect state property. Can you just clarify for us, what is the recourse for property owners when their land is occupied? Because there are cases even of private property owners, you know, who have been struggling with people who have put up informal dwellings on their property.
So the very same avenues that are available to the state are available to private landowners. At Worksmans, we work extensively with property owners who've been faced over a weekend or even overnight with their properties being invaded by hundreds and hundreds of people. And what the property owner needs to do in those instances is approach the court with as much as quickly as possible in order for them to secure an order to allow the sheriff and the SA SAPS to assist those particular individuals from moving. So as soon as you see any form of movement, we encourage you to approach the courts, get legal advice, and be before a judge before you are sitting with an invasion of 5,000 people that is going to be very difficult to give effect to.
I mean, you know, like, not everybody's going to have that money. I mean, is there like a certain period? Say, for example, if somebody came onto a property and they put up a shack, right? Now, I see them there, let's say, after the first day. Is there a time period? Should I get them off my property, ask them to leave, potentially even break down the shack? Because that is sometimes what you have to do, unfortunately, if somebody invades your land, break down their shack. Should it be done within a certain period of 24 hours, or should they be off in a particular time period?
As soon as possible. So some people do approach SAPS or are able to explain to that particular individual that they should not be on the property. But the sooner the better. I wouldn't encourage anyone to obviously take down another individual structure, because that just tends to escalate issues, and that's also a form of self-help that I would not encourage in those circumstances. But the sooner the better you approach that individual, notify them that you are the owner, and make it very clear that under no uncertain in terms, are they permitted to occupy the property, and should they not vacate the property or take down the structure or move their pigs that they have allocated, when they allocate and stand to themselves, that you will take legal action. And I know not all property owners have access to attorneys, but there are legal resource centers such as probono.org and other law clinics at universities that are available to assist private property owners as swiftly as possible.
Yeah. And then my last question, just for clarity, for example, if the person is on the property, is there a period, if they've been on there for like 24 hours, not 24 hours, maybe even longer, maybe I'm living in another province or even another part of the Western Cape, and my property is, let's say, 2.5 hours from me, and I've only go there, let's say, every 2 months. And this is what happens. People have holiday homes or properties that they go to like every 2 months or something. After a certain period, does it become more difficult for one to get people evicted off your land, and could they even begin to claim a right to staying on that land? I mean, we have a case in Skaapkraal, for example, where somebody has been unable to get people off their property for, let's say, a decade already.
So the first question that you asked was, is there a specific time period? No, there isn't. So, and why I said the sooner the better, the more time the person establishes themselves on the property, the more difficult it becomes for the courts to grant you that order that you require. And that example that you gave of 10 years, these are probably individuals who now, through the passage of time, they've established themselves in a particular area. And we mustn't forget that once you have been living in a place for a year or so, you take, there's an emotional attachment to that, and courts are then reluctant to remove people from those areas that they are now have, that they now have an emotional attachment to and now consider their home. So that is why it's always encouraged for you to move as quickly as possible. If you have a holiday home or you have a vacant piece of property and you live in another province, and ask your neighbors to keep an eye out and work as a community together to keep an eye out on your property. As soon as you come across someone who seems to be marking or allocating stands, get the community to assist you with communicating to those individuals that they are not allowed to be on the property and that they need to leave.
Thank you. Anneli, we're going to leave it at that. I want to thank you so much for your input this evening. We really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all the listeners.
Mm-hmm. So that's the end of our show this evening from myself, Yazid Kamaldin. Enjoy the rest of the evening in the company of the Voice of the Cape. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.